Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. For today, we will focus on the latest edition of the UBS CEO Macro Briefing Book, which is a quarterly report aimed at business owners to brief them on the most pressing macro and market topics. Now, since the publication of the last edition back in April, the macro environment has shifted gears with rate cut expectations once again on the rise, while the market performance seems to be broadening as well. Further, we all know that the election season would have its share of surprises, though the events of the past couple of weeks have simply been unprecedented. Joining us for today's conversation to talk about these developments, glad to welcome back the two authors of the UBS CEO Macro Briefing Book. They are Jason Dreho, Head of Asset Allocation for the Americas, as well as Paul Shao, Asset Allocation Strategist for the Americas, both from the UBS Chief Investment Office. With that, Jason, Paul, thank you again for dropping by Top of the Morning and for spending some time today with our listeners and our clients.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Dan. It's good to be here.
Absolutely. So let's start with the macro picture, Jason. The narrative from the first quarter seems to have shifted, and business owners and investors look like they are more concerned with slower growth than runaway inflation. Is that right from your vantage point?
Well, if we think about where we are today, and this is mid, late July versus where we were for the economy in late April when we published the last quarterly edition, it is true that sentiment for the, I think, the broader public has actually gotten a little bit worse. But for business owners, it seems to be, a little bit better, although the overall levels of kind of confidence are still dissipated. And I think you're accurate that in April, the concern was inflation and even sort of stagflation. There was talk about that. Now, I think it's a little bit more concern where, like, it's less inflation, maybe more a little bit about that on growth. If we think about the inflation story, when we've last published, we had only data through the first quarter of this year, and we know that inflation was running hot in the first quarter, actually to the point where core CPI inflation, if you annualized it for the first 2 months of the year, it was almost around 8%. Now in the second quarter, we have all the data, and it's a much better story. It's, the core inflation is annualizing to be a little over 2, but headline CPI is actually just over 1% annualized in the second quarter. So it looks like now the disinflation trend that was on evident all last year took a pause in the first quarter, but it's continued. I think that inflation story and the stagflation issues have definitely receded significantly. There were rising concerns about kind of the growth outlook, and we saw that with data surprising the downside for much of the second quarter, and data coming down and the growth kind of evident sort of slowing from where we were in the middle of last year through the end of last year and even in the first quarter. Now, the most recent data that we got for June, especially on things like retail sales, actually suggests that the consumer and spending was maybe better than feared, as we moved into, the end of the spring and the early part of the summer. And what we kind of see is an overall picture where growth is actually still, quite, good, where the economy is growing at, 2% or higher if we kind of measure kind of private sector demand. So I think that's not yet fully kind of, baked into maybe some of the expectations. But when you kind of add it up, from our vantage point, inflation has definitely improved. Growth is still, a solid level of around 2% plus. And now we have a, Federal Reserve that looks quite likely to start cutting interest rates in September. Ultimately, we think it's going to do a September cut and another one in December. The path thereafter is a little bit more uncertain. But, here we are in mid, kind of later July, and the overall macro backdrop looks relatively good. Like, it looks like the soft landing that we were anticipating all along is still very much on track. As all the sort of the economic data kind of, plays out. And the simple way we think about kind of some of the growth data, some of the stuff we're seeing for the consumer, particularly a lot of concerns about the consumer slowing, that the way we would sort of summarize it is that consumer spending is normalizing, not deteriorating. And it's normalizing from an elevated level to something that's closer to kind of long-term kind of, levels. The same thing would apply with the labor market. It was very strong 2 years ago, and we've seen a kind of a gradual cooling from a very tight hot labor market to something that looks much more in balance, similar to where it was kind of prior to the pandemic. So strong, but not hot. And again, sort of moving in a way that would give the Fed comfort to cut rates. So while the sentiment remains low, a key data point, I think, for our kind of clients and CEOs is the National Federation of Independent Business. If you look at their monthly sentiment survey of small business owners, it's actually ticked up a little bit for the past few months. you zoom out of the past few years, it's still low, but it looks like maybe the trough is in. And if the economic data continues in this direction, ultimately we think, you know, the small business and business owner and CEO sentiment will pick up. But right now, I think there's still a little bit of caution overall. That's the takeaway.
Okay, so now we're current on the macro environment. And Jason, thank you for that overview. Paul, to welcome you into the conversation. As we've been talking about in prior conversations, part of the report is dedicated to sketching out a bull case that you both have dubbed the Roaring Twenties. For our listeners, our clients, Paul, can you describe for us what that environment looks like and how close are we to getting to that point?
Certainly. So Jason spoke about sort of the recent developments of the economy and how it's more normalizing. But I think it's still worth taking stock about how well the U.S. economy actually has performed since the pandemic. You know, last year we came out with a report sketching what a Roaring Twenties outcome could look like. And remember, this was at a time when there were still lingering fears about stagflation, even more recession this year. So we thought that a Roaring 20 scenario would be, you know, GDP growing around 2.5% in real terms, inflation about 3%, policy rates between 3-4%, and longer interest rates around 4%. So much more akin to the environment we had in the mid to late 1990s versus the more sluggish economy that was in the GFC, which could have happened had there been a more conflicting policy response or a stagflationary environment. And right now, these sort of variables that we outline look very much in line. In 2024, you know, we expect real GDP growth to be around 2.4%, which is above trend. CPI inflation to be above around 3%, which is moderation from last year and certainly, but still higher than the Fed's target of 2%. Policy rates to remain still higher, but longer interest rates to be around 4%. So we're really around that Roaring 20s scenario that we outlined last year. So we feel pretty good about that. Additionally to that, pockets of the economy have seen a lot of improvement. Entrepreneurship activity, business applications are structurally higher. Pockets of investment aided by the legislation that Biden passed, including IRA, certainly surged since 2022. And as well, there's an immigration tailwind that has helped power job growth for the last couple of years. Looking ahead, we're using this economic formula called the Solo Swan framework as a general framework to see how sustainable can this Roaring 20s environment really last. And that really just states that growth is a function of productivity, capital, and labor. So we mentioned that capital investment has improved over the last couple of years. We think that labor will be aided by this immigration tailwind, as well as any benefits from AI, gradual AI adoption that we're seeing gradually. And that should affect productivity. So we are quite optimistic on growth versus what we saw last cycle. Bear in mind, this is still very much the bull case in our scenario, but there is more and more growing evidence to support this.
Well, thank you, Paul, for laying out that framework and providing an update on how the Roaring 20s scenario is perhaps progressing. So, Jason, to welcome you back into the conversation, our listeners might recall prior editions of the report have noted sluggish capital raising activity. Now, in anticipation of lower rates, do you think that narrative has at all changed? And also, markets seem to have made a general rotation since the start of July, which you and I recently spoke about. How sustainable is that shift?
Well, I'll pick up on the last part first in terms of the rotation. It is true that the laggards in equity markets in the first half of this year have bounced the most and have rallied quite a bit in the early part of July, whereas the biggest leaders in the market, like the tech companies and the overall, like the NASDAQ index, they are the more laggards so far in July. Ultimately, I think I'm a little kind of cautious on this rotation. We really have a long runway. We may not get a complete reversal where the winners of the first half, the tech sector, will kind of retake the lead and really continue to outperform. I think there is signs of a little bit more broadening out, versus where we were of last year. But I think a strong rotation, that might be a little presumptuous at this point in time. Now, this is relevant when we think about kind of overall corporate activity, whether it is M&A among public companies or private equity, like private equity firms buying public companies, buying private firms, exit activities, whether it's private equity firms selling their portfolio companies or taking them public to IPOs, or younger, like kind of venture-backed companies doing IPO activity. And likewise, just for the overall state of VC activity. So a lot of different categories of corporate activity. You know, we began the year, I think, with a lot of people in the industry who kind of expected there'd be a pickup in this activity. And there's been times of a little bit of kind of green shoots, to only see those kind of green shoots get sort of hit maybe by kind of a cold snap and sort of prevent them from picking up. We saw that early in the first quarter. The things kind of cooled down. We're seeing, again, a little bit of sort of signs of green shoots, especially more on the M&A side. But I think there's a, I think we need to see a real, further evidence that this would actually, pick up. Now, the macro conditions, as I alluded to in my first answer, are generally favorable. You know, growth looks pretty good. Inflation's coming down. The Fed is likely to cut interest rates in September and again later this year. There's been a lot of, people waiting for that to happen before they actually want to kind of, pull the trigger and make an actual acquisition or do some sort of deal. So all these factors, including financing conditions, lower kind of corporate bond spreads, somewhat relatively easier, favorable financing conditions, all this is supportive of M&A activity picking up. So it's likely it will pick up, and we've seen it already. Where we are, though, is probably at best average or even slightly below average, historical average kind of M&A activity. It's certainly not surging. It's not booming. So from a somewhat low base, there's going to be sort of a pickup in activity. I think first and foremost, we'll probably see that with just overall M&A activity, mostly strategic acquirers buying other companies, but also some private equity activity. What will likely take a little bit longer is IPO activity to pick up, in part just because it takes companies kind of a while to prepare for and actually file for an IPO and go public. So that may be more of a 2025 story, whereas M&A activity can really kind of start to pick up in the third and particularly the fourth quarter of this year. The key to a lot of this corporate activity is ultimately you need sort of exit events. So private equity firms need to be able to exit from the companies they already own in order to make other acquisitions. They need the IPO market to really open up for that. In the venture capital space, you need companies to be able to kind of go public or sell out to a strategic acquirer for that activity to pick up. So again, it's sort of you need the IPO market to kind of really open up activity there. That may be more of a 2025 story. So again, there's some positive momentum. The macro conditions we think are generally favorable. Financing conditions should be favorable. So moving in the right direction, but it might take a little while, like another at least a quarter or two, before we really start to see activity kind of across the board pick up, but led first by M&A, then private equity, and then ultimately kind of IPOs and venture capital activity. And that's the sequencing. And if the market performance does broaden out, so we're not seeing just a handful of mega cap tech stocks doing well, but you see small caps doing well, you see a little bit more speculative tech stocks doing well, that will kind of accelerate this process if that is really truly sustained.
Well, Jason, thank you for helping us to manage expectations and for making sense of the recent market moves we have witnessed. So before we close out, Paul, I did mention at the top how we've been closely following the 2024 election cycle. Now, this particular election has had major developments occurring since the publication, I think back to the past couple of weeks in particular. So have these developments, Paul, made any significant change in your outlook for business owners?
You know, I think from a political perspective, from a historic perspective, a lot has changed and it's been rather unprecedented. But from a market perspective, and frankly from our perspective, a lot of this also stayed the same. The odds that we've outlined, 45% chance of a red sweep, 15% chance of divided government under Republicans, 30% chance Democratic splits, and 10% chance blue sweep, those haven't changed as we wait for more polling data since the last couple of weeks. And because Harris is the most likely replacement for Biden at this point, and since she's his vice president, it's more likely than not that her policies would be very similar to what happened in the first Biden administration. So from a macro perspective, there are pros and cons that we see from a, quote-unquote, second term. From a Democratic side, some stimulative effects could be from extending parts of the legislation mentioned before, like the Inflation Reduction Act. But we might see more increases in tax, which could slow down the economy to some extent. On the Republican side, there is a much more scope and probably willingness to extend tax cuts, especially those passed in Trump's first term in 2017, as there's part of it's about to expire in 2025. But more unfriendly actions like higher tariffs in the world would certainly be adverse to business owners in the U.S. And that said, I think business owners are looking for certainty after the election, as well as a more conducive market environment, whether that's through lower rates, especially, and lower volatility, I think are welcome additions after this election season that they're waiting for.
It's interesting to hear about the potential political implications. We shall see how the balance of this election cycle plays out. Though, Paul, Jason, thank you both for spending some time today with our listeners and our clients to walk them through the latest iteration of the ongoing UBS CEO Macro Briefing book, which is now available for our listeners and clients up on UBS.com/CIO. Jason, Paul, thank you again. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.